Monkshood by Ellis Peters, dramatized for radio by Bert Cools, with Sir Michael Horden as the narrator and Philip Maddock as Brother Cadfael. Episode 3, Hunted.
It is the year of grace 1138, and the tranquillity of the Benedictine Abbey of St. Peter and St. Paul in Shrewsbury has been disturbed by murder. The body of Gervase Brunel, lord of the manor of Malilly, lies in the mourning chapel, and his stepson, Edwin, who was promised an inheritance of great wealth, only to see it given instead to the church, is hunted for the crime. Brother Cadfael, long-time friend to Edwin's mother, is hiding the boy in his small workshop in the grounds of the abbey.
Brother Cadfael, I think you've been testing me.
Yes, and me too, when I was pretending to be Edwin. But how?
I deceived you both, and you must forgive me for it. Gervase Brunel wasn't struck down. He was poisoned.
Poisoned?
It was in the partridge that he alone ate. Monkshood oil. The same oil I showed to you just now. If you had been the murderer, your reaction would have betrayed you at once.
Poison. I had no great love for him, but even so, what a horrible way to die.
Yes.
Death should visit no man before its due time, no matter what form it takes. Now, we must decide what to do with you two.
Well, Edwin can't go home.
No, that he can't, but you can, Master Edwin.
But he needs me.
You're a staunch friend and true, but now your place is with your family. One thing, you can bring the news of Edwin. But, lad, keep a shut mouth, except with those you're sure of.
What about me?
Yes, what about you? You're a very different matter, my friend.
Where are we going? Suppose someone sees us.
What is there to see? You make quite a presentable novice, and I'm often about even as early as this. Yeah, used to my ways. Now then, here's the west door. Wait a moment. Right, all's clear. Come on with you.
This road leads to London, doesn't it?
In the end it does. But don't try leaving that way, even if you have to run, which God forbid.
Why not?
Because the sheriff will have men on the road, probably out to St. Giles. You must be sensible and lie still.
Where?
You'll see. This is one of the abbey, hey, Barnes? It's not much visited, and you should be safe here up in the loft. I must leave you now, if I'm to be there for time.
You will come back.
I'll be with you before night. And if I were you, I'd burrow down into the hay and sleep the day out.
Brother Cadfael?
Yes, my friend.
Tell my mother I did not ever wish him harm.
Fool child. I've been assured of that already, and who do you suppose told me? If not your mother. Huh. Sleep safe now. I'll not desert you.
Look, I know you don't want to risk getting me into trouble.
Well, then.
But you must see that I could help.
Help, Mark? With what exactly? I'll tell you this.
What?
Whatever else may or may not be happening, you are still my apprentice, and there's much to be done in the workshop.
Very well. Are you coming too?
No, I'm off to the abbot's kitchen to see Brother Petrus.
You're going to ask him about a certain partridge, are you?
Hey, the workshop.
That partridge? It was as fine a bird as ever I saw. Wasted on the likes of him.
Gervase Brunel?
Friar Robert. Ah. No sooner was our good Abbot Herbert sent for from London than Robert was treating this place as his own. He comes in here, telling me my craft.
The partridge.
Aye, that's exactly the sort of thing I'm talking about. One arrives every Christmas, a gift for Abbot Herbert. But this year, it's his partridge and his alone. You'd think the poor Abbot had never been here.
Petrus.
You'll be wanting to know who touched the potion. Who could have added the poison?
Yes.
No one went near it. Not while it was here. None but myself. And before you speak, I'll say it for you. If it had been the rest of the bird that was poisoned, I'd give you leave to look sideways at me.
Brother.
And if you're thinking maybe something befell by accident, I'll tell you this. If ever I did go so far as to brew up a monk's hood stew for that one, I'd make certain that the right bowl, went to the right valley.
Brother Cadfab.
Aldith, isn't it?
That's right, brother.
How was your mistress? Did she come for Mass as well?
No. Brother Cadfab, may I speak to you for a moment?
Of course, child. Let's move away from the bustle. All right, sit you down here. That's the way.
Thank you.
Now, what is it you want to say to me? Is it about Mistress Bunnell?
Yes, it is.
Huh? How does she fare?
She's well enough in body, but fearfully distressed in mind.
For Edwin?
Yes. There's been no word that he's been captured, and I tell her that that's a comfort, but...
Yeah, well, she's in torment, not knowing where the lad is.
Yes. Poor lady. She needs a friend. I thought, perhaps...
Aldith, are you in haste to get back?
Aelfric will be coming here to collect the dinner soon. I thought I'd wait for him and help him carry everything.
Then, if you permit, I'll sit and talk with you a little while.
Of course. Thank you.
How is Aelfric?
It's difficult for him, having to fetch the meal again today after what happened yesterday, knowing that people may be eyeing him and wondering about him.
You mean thinking that he may have poisoned his master's food?
He was alone with the dish for so long. Even you must have wondered, brother, isn't that so?
No help for that, not until we know the truth. The sergeant believes he knows it already. Do you agree with him?
No. Master Edwin would never have done it. But what's the use of my telling you all this?
What do you mean, girl?
You surely know what I mean. I'm deep in the same coil myself. It was I who set the partridge to keep hot on the hob while Aelfric carried the main dish into the room. I was alone with it.
And did you add the poison?
I added nothing. But what avails my saying that when there's no proof? Of course I would say that, whether it were true or no.
You're very sensible and very just. Tell me this. Your friend Meirig was at the house for that meal too. When did he arrive?
Let me think. Aelfric took in the tray, and I followed with the platters and the jug of ale. When I came back into the kitchen, Meirig was just coming in the door.
So he was never alone with the partridge, even supposing he had known what it was and who it was for?
No, never. And anyway, what reason could he have had for wanting Master Bunnell dead? Oh, there's Aelfric. Excuse me, brother, I must go.
Tell me, Aldith, now that Master Bunnell is dead, who does Aelfric belong to? Does he go with the manor to the abbey?
No, he was left out of the charter. Aelfric was my lord's villein personally.
So now he belongs to whoever inherits the personal effects, to widow or son, granted the boy escapes the criminal charge.
That's right.
Now, you know Mistress Bunnell's mind. Don't you think that she would at once give Aelfric his freedom, with a glad heart? And wouldn't her son do the same?
Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. And Aelfric would surely think so too.
All the girl would give by way of answer was a brief, blinding flash of the black, intelligent eyes and the sudden veiling swoop of large lids and long, dark lashes. Then she went across Aelfric's path. He trudged along by her side, stiff and mute. Cadvile stood looking after them for a long moment, observing and wondering.
Good day to you, Sergeant.
Brother Cadvile.
If you don't mind, Sergeant, I think you found that flask on the shelf above. Here, let me... To everything is place, you know. And my apologies for keeping you waiting. I've only just been told you were here.
You may be able to help me. This oil of yours. The poison.
The medicine. You should have been looking over there.
Can you tell if any is missing?
No. The amount needed would be very small and never missed from a jar that size. This I can say. I examined the neck and stopper of that container yesterday, the day of the murder. There was no trace of oil at the lip. I doubt if a thief would stop to wipe the bottle clean as I do.
So, it was taken from the jar they keep at the infirmary.
Have you spoken to Brother Edmund?
Oh, yes, and his helpers. But none of them can hazard an opinion.
Mm. So you've made little progress.
I've not caught my man, not yet, but I'll wager he's still close. It's only a matter of time.
You're very sure of the boy. Yet there are at least four others who are there in the house, and I could make as good a case against one or two of them.
What case?
No, I won't do it. I'd rather consider proof than suspicion. And until some proof is found, you should disregard no one.
Including you?
Certainly.
And what proof would you find acceptable, brother?
Whoever you seize, you should examine his clothing for signs that he carried that oil. It leaves both stain and smell.
Is that all?
No. If I were in your shoes, I would be searching for a small vial, probably of glass, anywhere within a modest distance of that house. Whoever used the poison would be in a great haste to get rid of the bottle as soon as possible.
Indeed. Very interesting, brother.
Sergeant, what is it you are not telling me?
I have not been idle since yesterday. My men have taken witness from any we could find who were close by the Burnell house at dinner hour.
And
we found a carter who was crossing the bridge at just the right time. He saw someone run from the house in high temper.
Edwin Gurney, after the argument with Master Burnell. This is not new information.
No, but this is. The carter saw the boy slow down for a moment by the river's edge and hurl something small and glittering into the water.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because it didn't have anything to do with what happened.
No.
Look, I'll tell you about it now if it's important.
Important? It's the sergeant's strongest proof against you. The thing you threw is being interpreted as the poison bottle.
I didn't know. Do you think that's what it was?
No, I don't. For a moment I may have been shaken, but no longer. Now, tell me.
It was a present for my stepfather. Not because I liked him, I didn't, but as a peace offering for my mother's sake. And to show that I was serious about being a craftsman, too, and should make a good one.
So to something of your own crafting?
He had a relic. It's supposed to be a piece of Our Lady's mantle. I don't believe it's true, but he valued it greatly, so I made him a little reliquary, just the right size for it, a small box with a hinged lid.
Tell me what it was made from. Describe it exactly.
Polished pear wood, inlaid with silver and mother of pearl.
Something small and glittering.
Brother?
And you had it in your hand when he drove you from the house with his malice?
Yes. He said if I wanted my inheritance back, I'd have to crawl on my knees and beg. How could I offer him a gift after that?
In your place, I should have done exactly what you did. Leave without a word more.
But not thrown your handiwork in the river, perhaps. At that moment, I never wanted to see it again, but now, it wasn't badly made, I think.
Keep your heart up, lad. It's getting late. I must go.
Back to the Abbey?
Yes, for Compline. And then back to the town. There's one question that no one has thought to ask. I must go and ask it.
Who's there?
Come, Clive. Open to me for a few minutes. We'll show this.
Hush, softly. Aldred and Elfric are both asleep. I'm so worried. The sheriff's men are everywhere. What can have happened to Edwin?
He is well and still free.
Thank God. Cadfael, if you were not here...
Childers, there's something I came to ask you. Did your husband ever actually draw up and sign the deed that made Edwin his heir before he changed his mind?
Yes, he did. Our man of law drew it up properly and I have it in writing. But the new agreement with the Abbey makes it void.
No. When Abbot Heribert was called to London, that agreement concluded. Well, now it never can be.
Of course. So if...
So all that stands between Edwin and his manor is the threat of arrest for murder. Tell me this, if you know it. Supposing the worst happened...
Cadfael.
Which it must not and will not. And Edwin was convicted. Then what happens to the estate of Melilee? Edwin couldn't inherit it. The Abbey couldn't claim it. Who becomes the heir?
Well, I suppose I would get my dower as the widow. But the manor could only revert to the overlord, the Earl of Chester.
You're sure? There's no nephew or cousin of Master Burnell's anywhere in the shire?
No, none.
I'd hoped that there might be.
There's no one who stood to gain by Gervais' death, only Edwin. Oh, Cadfael.
Oh, easy now.
Cadfael laid his broad, gnarled hand on her slender one and marked with tenderness its enlarged knuckles and tracery of violet veins, more touching than any girlish smoothness could ever have been. Her face was beautiful, too, even in its aging. It was lined, now that he saw it almost at peace, with good humour and the long experience of happiness which this brief ordeal of disruption and pain could do little to deflower. The warm hand under his turned and closed.
Cadwyle, when I married that first time, did you take it so hard? Did it have to be the cloister? I never knew I'd done you such an injury.
The whole fault was mine. You married the right man and were blessed. I've wished you well always, as I do now.
Do you remember the night we pledged to marry?
Of course I do.
That was December, too, a chill night, much like this. Cadwyle...
Chill this. Yesterday you told me the cowl became me. The choices we made were the right choices. I must go.
Yes, you must.
And he let himself out and returned through the chill and sparkle of the frosty night to the place he had chosen, and still and forever now preferred. Behind him, a meagre shadow detached itself from the shelter of the eaves of Rishilde's house and slid along the road after him. But Brother Cadwyle, as was his way, did not look back.
Laquamo de ordine nostro.
Chapter, the next morning, promised to be as dull as usual, but Cadwyle, dozing gently behind his pillar, remained alert enough to prick his ears at the mention of a certain item of abbey business.
Father Prior?
Brother Matthew?
I must ask your guidance on the question of Master Bonnell's horse.
His horse?
It is a matter of some urgency. Because of the number of guests, both here and still expected, all spaces in the abbey stables will be needed. Have I your permission to move the Bonnell beast and some of our own animals out of the grounds to the old hay barn?
Thundan.
That seems an excellent arrangement. Make the transfer at once.
Father.
Is there any further business?
By your leave, Father Prior.
Brother Jerome.
I feel it my duty, Father Prior, to express my deep concern for the spiritual welfare of one of our dearly valued brothers.
Indeed? Of whom do you speak?
I speak of Brother Cadwyle.
What?
I do not say, Father, that there has been any impropriety in his conduct, but I appeal for guidance for his soul's sake.
In what way is his soul in peril?
Father, it has come to my knowledge that many years since, before his call to this blessed vocation, Brother Cadwyle was in a relationship of worldly affection with the lady who is now Mistress Bonnell. By reason of the death of her husband, he was drawn back into contact with her. Consider, Father, how severe a test may thus be imposed upon a brother's sincere devotion.
Do you allege that Brother Cadwyle has been in unlawful conversation with this woman? On what occasion? I know that he attended Master Bonnell's deathbed, but it was no more than his duty to go where he was needed.
Certainly that was his Christian duty. But our brother has visited the widow again and spoken with her only last night, doubtless for the purpose of comforting the bereaved. But what dangers lurk in such a meeting, Father, I need not try to express. I speak as one having our brother's spiritual health at heart.
Brother Cadwyle!
I am here, Father Prior. Examine me of my actions as you wish. Brother Jerome is somewhat over-tender of my vocation, which is in no danger.
Is it indeed truth that Mistress Bonnell was intimately known to you before you took your vows?
It is. If by intimately you mean only well and closely, on terms of affection. Before I took the cross, we held ourselves to be affianced.
And is it also true that you visited this woman last night?
I went there to ask certain questions which bear upon her husband's death, a matter which you, Father Prior, and I, and all here, must devoutly wish to be cleared up as quickly as possible, so that this house may be in peace.
That is the business of the sheriff and his sergeant, and none of yours.
I think there is doubt in the matter, and the truth will not be easily uncovered. It was my own preparation.
You show lack of faith in those who uphold the law. It is an arrogant attitude, and I deplore it. I cannot allow you, by your own folly, to stray into spiritual danger. You will have no further contact with Mistress Bonnell. You will confine yourself to the enclave, and your energies to your proper functions of work. and worship. Do I make myself clear?
I shall obey the order laid on me as a duty bound. God forgive me. If I could have wrung his scrawny little neck there and then, I would have done it and rejoiced.
How in the world did he know?
Now I saw him watching me as I left the enclave after Compline. He must have followed me and pressed his ear lovingly to the keyhole.
And now you're confined to the Abbey grounds.
But you, young man, have no such order to observe.
I was hoping that you were going to say that.
I would not involve you in my sins, God knows, if this were not urgent. Perhaps I still should not.
From all I gather, he's barely out of childhood. The Gospels are insistent that we should take care of the children.
Anyway, I fancy you've reasoned out most of the story already.
I have an excellent teacher. Now, tell me where I must go and what I must do.
What's that?
Come on, boy. Here you.
Horses. Two. No, three. What's happening?
Easy there, my dearie.
He's a fine beast. The old man knew his horse flesh, I'll say that for him.
Well, we best fill up the hay racks.
Oh, there's not much fodder.
There's plenty up in the loft.
No.
Edwin's hiding place was storage for more than just hay. As quickly as the need for stealth would permit, he rolled a barrel across to settle solidly over the trapdoor, perched on top of his barricade, and wished himself three times as heavy.
Oh, it won't shift. Some fool's bolted it on top.
Use your brawn, man. You're not such a weight as all that.
I tell you, it's stuck fast.
Oh, come down and let a man chance his arm.
Oh, careful, you fool. This ladder's none too strong.
Now, this is the way. You have to put your back behind it. You watch it.
Oh, yeah, I'm watching. Get on with it.
Right.
Still watching?
Some fool locked it on top.
We'll use the outside steps. Your back's still in one piece, is it?
God. Right. Rufus! Rufus, boy! So you're the fine beast, eh? Well, that's true enough.
Hey, the trapdoor's open.
What are you doing? Here!
There's someone down there.
Oi, you!
It's one of the brothers!
Come on, Rufus, boy!
No, yeah. Brother, stop him!
Stop him yourself.
Edwin lay low on the rippling shoulders, his fists in the light mane. He had neither saddle nor bridle, but he had ridden this mount bareback more times than he could remember in the days before he fell out of favour with its owner. Now, in the knowledge that there was no horse for miles about that could match Rufus, Edwin rejoiced in his power and his speed and his freedom. Too late, Edwin remembered Cadvile's warning not to take the London road. He recalled it only when he saw them before him, armed and vigilant. The sheriff's men.
You! Dismount and account for yourself!
Come on, Rufus! Round! I'll never forgive myself if they take him. I was there just too late.
Now, catch your breath, lad. Then tell me the tale properly.
Right. Well, when I got to the barn, the abbey grooms were already there. But before I could talk to them, I heard a hue and cry on the road and saw the boy on horseback fair flying along.
Which way was he going?
Towards the town, close pursued by three guards.
Now, you said if they take him, he got away then?
Well, the sheriff's men had to stop to talk to the grooms to find out what had happened. By then, an audience had gathered in the road and had to be cleared. And then...
Well?
Well, just as the captain of the guard was ready to set off again, his horse suddenly reared up and threw him. It took him a full 3 or 4 minutes to calm the animal.
Well, that is a very singular occurrence. I mean, those men have the finest beasts available. Why should one of them suddenly... I seem to remember you telling me once of when you were a boy on your uncle's farm.
Oh, yes?
And how you were set to follow the plough with a sack full of small stones to scare off the birds. Proud of your aim you were, as I recall. So the boy got away.
Clean vanished.
Well,
All the reports are in, sir.
And? No sign of him.
So he's still in the town somewhere.
Perhaps he's waiting for dark to make a break.
Send word to all the road patrols. I want torches at each site and no let-up in the watch.
Sir.
Sergeant! Sir!
Well, man, spit it out!
He's been seen, sir. Still mounted and moving cross-country. Making for the London Road beyond the guard post.
That's more like it. Fetch my horse!
The chase went on for hours. The desperate boy seemed to know every byway and every covert and managed to lead his pursuers into some perilous places. Through Atcham, Coon and Cressage, he held them off until Rufus tired and stumbled in the woods beyond Acton. And they were on him.
Okay, his hands tied.
Now, hold on.
Steady. Watch his feet. Oh, you little bastard.
Stand away from him.
But, sir.
Stand away.
He's not going anywhere. Are you, boy? Well, now, Edwin Gurney. Close on 6 hours I've been chasing you. Through mud and bramble and swamp and God knows what else. I've got 2 horses lame, 3 men hurt, and a sheriff telling me I can't catch some scrap of a child. Just pick him up and bring him back to town.
But, Sergeant, why have you brought the boy here? The murder should be dealt with at the castle, surely.
No, he's wandered on suspicion of murder, it's true. But the theft of the horse from your barn is manifestly proven. The law holds that his proper place is in the Abbey prison, at least overnight.
Very well. I shall examine him myself. The church must not turn its back upon the sinner, but only deplore the sin.
Your gatekeeper asked the prisoner if he wanted one of the brothers to come and talk to him.
And pray for his soul. That is very proper. What did the boy say?
He asked to see one brother in particular. Brother Catvile.
Good evening, Father Prior. And to you, Sergeant.
Gadvile, open the door. Let us see the prisoner.
Before I do so...
Must I do it myself? Open the door.
Of course.
Well, Edwin Gurney, you look a sorry sight. You face serious charges both against the church and the town. What do you have to say for yourself?
I believe the lad would have me say something on his behalf, and that urgently.
You? What can you say that is of such importance?
Simply this. This lad is guiltless of any of the crimes laid against him.
How can you say that?
Because this is not Edwin Gurney.
Monk's Hood was written by Ellis Peters and dramatized for radio by Bert Cools. The narrator was Sir Michael Horton. Brother Cadvile was played by Philip Maddock, Sergeant William Warden by Ian Hogg, Brother Mark by Ian Target, Mishildis Bonnell by Pat Haywood, Edward Belcott by Stephen Garlick, Brother Petrus by Fraser Carr, Aldith by Jane Whittenshaw, Edwin Gurney by Richard Pierce, Prior Robert by Geoffrey Whitehead, Brother Jerome by Andrew Winkert, and The Grooms by Andrew Winkert and Nigel Carrington. The producer was Melissa Evans.